My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick, and this is Sonatotum, episode 51. Hi, folks. On every episode of Sonatotum, we talk about making stuff, finding success as we each define it for ourselves, and staying healthy and sane in the process. I like to start the episode by recounting what I've been up to in the previous week in terms of my own creative endeavors, things that have gone right, things that have gone wrong, progress that's been made, steps that have been taken, steps that have been taken back. Just a window into what's been going on in this creator's life, so that at the very least, you might know that someone out there commiserates with you in your creative life. After the update, we'll get into the main topic of the show. But for now, wow. What kind of week has it been? Well, goodness gracious, folks. So Monday morning, it's my practice to start the day slow. I drink 16 ounces of water. First thing, that's the first thing that goes into my body. And then I have a nice large cup of coffee. And I take that coffee in while reading my feeds, the blogs that I follow, the various online sources, which I really, you know, let me know if you'd like me to share what's in my, what we used to call blog roll. I will happily share that up on mattselznick.com. So I'm doing that. And I learn that a Facebook friend who has been a fan of my work since, I'm pretty sure, before Facebook, Dave Alcock, passed away unexpectedly. And Dave was, by all accounts, a very kind, very generous, fun person. I only knew him through the social media and through my mailing list. He came to me, came to my work through my first novel, Brave Men Run, way back in the day when it was a free podcast, as well as, you know, being out there in ebook and print editions. But pretty sure he discovered it like so many other people did through the free podcast edition. This is the kind of guy Dave was. Back in, I don't know, 2015, maybe, I mentioned that I regretted losing the an old role-playing game set of books that I had had since I was in junior high school for the game Traveler. This was the original black box, the little 8x6 box with the three black books that were the core rule books for the game. And those books were just very basic. I mean, saddles, not even saddle stitch, just stapled together booklets, really, maybe about 60 pages each, that contained the original game of Traveler. And that was mostly when I mentioned that years and years ago, almost 10 years ago now, I was just, you know, feeling a little nostalgic, whatever. But I mentioned it like we often do in public on Facebook. And Dave messaged me that he was pretty sure he still had those and he's clearing out a bunch of stuff and getting rid of a bunch of stuff and he would be happy to ship them to me. And which, of course, I was really grateful for. So I offered to pay the shipping because Dave was in New Zealand. So I, of course, offered to pay the shipping and he wouldn't hear anything about it. He said he'd been living a life paying it forward and he wanted to do this. Some time went by and he messaged me and apologized for not doing it faster, but that he was glad that he had waited or had been delayed because he found a bunch of other material from that time period for Traveler. And he said that, you know, he was going to go ahead and include those things in the box that he was sending me as well, which he did, completely at his expense, completely at his own initiative and at the cost of his own effort. And it's a treasured possession, made even more special now that Dave is gone. Now, I was not close to Dave. I really just knew him because he liked my work. And he was nice. And so we were friendly. and he did this incredibly generous thing. But it really shook me, not least because I'm pretty sure Dave was just about 65 years old. I mean, that is still firmly in middle age, if late middle age these days, everything else being equal. I don't know the details of Dave's death. I don't know what happened. I do know that he was at a concert not a day before. This guy loved Midnight Oil and he loved football. And apparently the thing he was doing the day before he died was seeing Midnight Oil on one of their last shows in their last tour. So, you know, there's some solace there that he was doing the things that he loved and living the life that he wanted right up to the end, you know. But I was shaken by Dave's passing because Dave was part of my original core, long-lasting reader community. Someone who's been around and been enjoying my work and serving as a peer in the circle that is the creator and the people who experience the creator's work since probably 2005, 2006. And I'll miss him. I'll miss his kindness and his generosity, and I'll miss seeing his posts about how he has done or not done so well on Wordle. And because he was in New Zealand, he was always one of the first people to play it in my circles. Yeah, sometimes just seeing whether he got a good score or not inspired me to give it a shot. And vice versa, he would often share his results as a comment when I'd share my results. Anyway, Dave's gone. Dave, from everything that I can see, had a positive, wonderful impact on a lot of people's lives. And in a small way, that includes mine. So rest well, sir. So that's how my Monday started. That's how my Monday started. And then I went into my office here in the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media in Southern California and fired up the computer. And normally I hibernate my desktop computer the day before, the night before, so that it's quick and easy to start up the next day. And to wake it up from hibernation, I just press the space bar and Bob's your uncle. Nothing happened. Okay, weird. Maybe I misremembered. Maybe I actually completely shut it down the night before. So pressed the power button. Nothing happened. Well, that's weird. Look inside the case. The computer case has a plexiglass side so I can see all the peripherals and stuff. And I see, okay, well, there's a light on the graphics card, at least. I can see that. And it's getting power. I know at least that's happening. Try it again. Finally, I press the power button again for the millionth time and it starts to start. And then there's a click and it shuts down. So I'm like, well, fuck. Okay, something has maybe become unseated. Something, who knows, maybe there's a cable that's come loose somehow. Maybe it needs cleaning. You know, you never know with these things. Sometimes just taking them apart and putting them back together again and they work. So I unplugged everything from the back and I pulled the computer down, set it up on its side and opened up the case and got some compressed air and just gave it a few squirts and made sure the fans didn't have any dust on them or around them and all that usual stuff. And tried the power button again and started briefly, click, off. So then I thought, well, maybe I'll take the fan off of the CPU and just, you know, make sure everything's groovy there, which I did. And I took the fan off the CPU and unplugged it and gave it a good cleaning, put it back on, started it up. And I definitely smell hot metal. And oh, look at that. There's a single flame coming up off the motherboard about the size of the first two joints of my index finger. All right, the computer's on fire. Unplugged it right away. Fire went away. Now, I'll grant you, someone with perhaps more technical savvy, especially when it comes to hardware, might have been like, oh, well, you know, whatever. That doesn't necessarily mean your computer is trashed. But when something catches on fire, something electronic, I'm not inclined to fuck with that anymore. Because what if that had happened and I wasn't around? You know, what if that fire had reached one of the wires and that rubber around the wires caught on fire and then the power supply caught on fire and exploded? Did you know, I didn't know this, did you know those power supplies have like a bunch of oil inside them, and that when they get really, really hot and catch fire, they explode like a grenade and send flaming bits of oily metal all over the place? I did not know that till Monday, but I did know that the motherboard caught on fucking fire, so I have to get a new computer. Now, I make a living. My day job is as a creative services provider for other creators, mostly authors and podcasters. A huge portion of my day-to-day activity depends on this powerhouse, high-end gaming and video and audio editing computer that sits to my left on my desk. And I don't have time to fuck around. I have clients who have weekly expectations. I have obligations. I have deadlines every week. So I knew I had to get a computer that day. I did some shopping, right, online, but I didn't want to wait for Amazon Prime. So I actually bought this computer from a brick and mortar, from the Best Buy chain. I was surprised to discover that they have the same make as the last computer that I had. And you might be thinking, Matt, why would you buy the same kind of computer that just caught on fire? Well, first of all, okay, not the same computer, the same maker, but also 3 or 4 years newer than the computer that I had been using. And I've never had a problem with it. I don't have a lack of faith in the manufacturer, which is, for those of you keeping track, CyberPower. These things happen, right? So I paid for the new computer, went to Best Buy, picked it up, and the rest of Monday was spent getting acquainted with this new machine. I did salvage the hard drives, an SSD, a solid state drive, and a couple of traditional hard drives, and the RAM from the old computer. So I was immediately able to upgrade the new computer's RAM from 16 to 32 gigabytes. And unfortunately, I did not have the slot to install my old SSD from the other computer. So I did have to wait a couple of days to get a new PCI card. I know this is kind of deep in the technical weeds. Short version is I spent most of Monday and part of Tuesday just reinstalling software and resetting things up and getting things back to where I could do practical work. And then on Wednesday, I got the PCI card that I could install so that I could put in my old solid state drive from the other computer. And lo and behold, I should have thought about this. Two things I should have thought about had I expected this. So I put in the old solid state drive, and the new computer immediately recognizes it as the boot drive, and pow, I've got all my old stuff back. So if I had thought about that for a minute and thought it through, I could have saved all that effort reinstalling so many different software programs and setting things up and all that. So it goes. I was most bummed that I was going to lose my presets for my audio and video editing programs, which save me a lot of work every week when I'm doing repetitive tasks for my clients. So happily, got all that stuff back. The new computer is up and running. It's pretty cool. It is definitely faster and has a better graphics card and cumulatively more memory than the old computer. I'm back up and running, but I did lose Monday, Tuesday, part of Wednesday because of all that. And that means that super behind on work, and I'll be working this weekend. But it also means that I did very little in terms of creativity this past week. I managed to look at Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights, the free serial fiction project that I deliver to my mailing list subscribers, which you can get. Just go to mattselznick.com and click on free fiction. For those of you who haven't listened before, my goal in September is to write a whole bunch of installments for Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights so that I'm a little ahead of the game and there's a little buffer, because in October I'm returning my attention to my next novel, Shadow of the Outsider. So the idea was to have 4, 5, 6 installments of Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights ready to go for my mailing list subscribers. But as it's turned out, I mean, here we are on the 17th, and I have managed to write an installment last week, the week of the 4th through the 10th, and I managed to write an installment this week that we're in now, the 11th, the 17th. By the way, yes, it's September 17th, 2022, as I'm speaking to you right now. So not exactly the writing on Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights every single day that I had hoped September would be, but there are 12 more days in the month, so let's see how I do. Maybe the fates and circumstance and situations will allow me to really have a dedicated writing practice in the last 2 weeks of this month, and I'll get ahead on that. But that was it. Creativity-wise, I managed to write an additional installment of Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights. I believe it was installment number 77 or 78. Got that queued up and scheduled for my mailing list subscribers. And that was it. The rest of my week was spent fucking around with this computer and playing catch up. And I'm still playing catch up. So that's what happens sometimes. It feels like it happens a lot. I'm trying to remember the wonderfully productive creative month I had in August and be grateful for that and not forget that that is possible. But yeah, September is for sure not following suit. But like I said, there are 13 more days after today in the month. So I'll give it a good go. See how it happens. So, my friends, I saw a couple of quotes. Well, one thing was a discussion and the other was a quote. And I'm not going to work too hard to have them dovetail neatly together, but they do both kind of speak to my heart. The first, I am a social media friend with the author Adam Troy Castro. And it was either him or the writer, David Gerald, who posted how apparently out there on the interwebs, like this shit even matters, right? But somewhere out on the interwebs, some person had just seen the original Blade Runner movie for the first time. And they were shocked, I tell you, to discover that the lead character, played by Harrison Ford, was a cop who shoots slaves in the back, because that is what Blade Runner, that's what happens in Blade Runner, right? If you have not seen Blade Runner, well, first of all, rush out and get it, find a way to see it, try to get the director's cut, the final Ridley Scott director's cut. It's brilliant. It's a beautiful film. And it's all about what it means to be human and personal liberty and memory and individuality and our right to our own destiny, no matter what or who we are. It's about what it means to be human, right? Which is near and dear to what I like to write about and create about. But apparently, and this isn't exclusive to Blade Runner, some folks are troubled when the lead character, the protagonist, represents reprehensible beliefs, behaviors, and they have a less than perfect moral character, moral fiber. If you haven't seen Blade Runner, in a very brief nutshell, without really spoiling much, the premise is that in the near future, we have discovered how to create autonomous semi-biological artificial humans called replicants. And they are basically a labor force, and they are sentient and sapient. They have artificially implanted memories, and they have a built-in limited lifespan of like 5 years. And they're a labor force. They are why it's possible for humans to expand out into the solar system and to the stars, and they are central to the economy. They're slaves. They're slaves. And there is a law enforcement authority whose job it is to keep replicants in line when they get out of line. And the people who hunt down and either kill or capture for whatever re-education, who knows, are called Blade Runners. Okay. I'm not even sure why. Maybe I will research it and put it in the show notes. And so Harrison Ford plays a Blade Runner who, in pursuing this team of replicants, uncovers some things. And yes, in one scene, he shoots a fleeing replicant in the back, killing them, which these days, right? 2022, the image of a police officer shooting a fleeing suspect in the back carries a lot of weight. When Blade Runner came out in 1984, I want to say, had a different meaning. And so I guess folks are surprised by the idea of the imperfect protagonist. Protagonist does not mean hero. The protagonist is supposed to be flawed. And they either learn from their flaws and serve to be an aspirational lesson, or they fail in their conflict against their flaws and serve as a cautionary example. That's called fiction. So the idea that anybody would be upset, I mean, if you want characters who just don't change, don't grow, then enjoy that, I guess. There are stories out there where the protagonist's purpose is to be a catalyst for change for other characters, and that's fine. But getting up in arms about a story where the main character is, by any objective measure, the bad guy. Well, yeah, to be up in arms about that is to reject, I mean, the entire history of literature in whatever form you want it to take, however you want to think of that. Books, music, comics. The Marvel Comics Punisher character, made popular by the Netflix series, is a fucked up psychopath who murders people. Does he only murder the people who have committed crimes? Yeah. But did you know that in the original conception of the comics, that includes anybody from someone hooked on drugs all the way up to the kingpin who provides those drugs? Yeah, the Punisher used to shoot junkies. Now, today, we would consider junkies, rightfully so, to be people with addiction problems who need help, not to be gunned down. But the Punisher is one of the most popular pop culture characters out there today. Disgustingly, and much to the objection of the creators of The Punisher, Jerry Conway and I believe it was Gil Kane, police departments are adopting The Punisher's famous skull logo. I'm not even going to get into why there's so much wrong with that. But my point is that we have had anti-heroes all along, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this because the more I talk about it, the more I think you're smarter than this, right? I think you're smart enough to recognize that Philip Marlowe, Sam Spade, Decker from Blade Runner, The Punisher, Magneto, the Winter Soldier, the list goes on and on from pop culture. And you could go into literature. I mean, the protagonist of Crime and Punishment. He's an axe murderer. Right? But there are things, literature is a tool. Fiction is a tool for showing the human condition in all its colors, in all its shades of gray. And I've said before, you know, your fiction should have a point of view. Your fiction should take a stand about something. And I don't mean in a preachy way. I mean reflected in the characters and the events of the story and the way the characters respond and the actual outcome. Fiction, I've said this quote so many times over the years, I really ought to know who first said it. I will track it down, put it in the show notes that you can find at mattselznick.com. Go over to the podcasts area and look for the show notes for this episode 51. But as I've often quoted, fiction is using lies to tell the truth. The truth is not pretty. The truth is not black and white. The truth does not match whatever we think it should be. Fiction shows us what is. So anyway, kind of, sort of along those same lines, someone shared a quote from the spoken word artist, poet, writer, and singer, Henry Rollins. And it goes like this. It'll destroy you if you try to make it mean anything to anyone but yourself. And Henry's talking about art, right? And he's talking, I think, about something kind of similar to what we've been discussing here in the last 10 minutes or so. The idea that you shouldn't be worrying about what people are going to think. You shouldn't be trying to craft something that is going to match the expectations or demands of some prospective possible consumer of your art. The first person that has to mean something to is you. And this gets back to what I'm saying is have a point of view, have an opinion. Don't be afraid to reflect your own ideals, morals, character in your fiction. It's not going to be for everybody. It's not supposed to be for everybody. If you don't worry about what it means to everybody else, if you worry first about what it means to you, I got news for you. There are going to be people out there for whom it means a great deal as well. This is related to the idea that there is universality in specificity, that the more authentic, the more real, the more based on actual emotion and feeling and human behavior and experience your work is, the more universal its appeal will be. And this is why we enjoy stories that are rich in detail and verisimilitude. Even if we've never experienced the same events as those that are depicted in the work, because the underlying elements, the human reaction to these experiences, these specific experiences, that's where we build the connection, right? That's where the empathy is developed. So, you know, we can have people who say they relate to certain characters, even though they're not a 300-year-old vampire or a teenage boy from Queens who can stick to walls or, you know, whatever. Those characters, or let me put it this way, enduring characters, enduring stories, stories that resonate, involve emotional content that, again, is either aspirational or cautionary. So don't worry about pleasing the unknown reader. This gets back to what I was saying a couple of episodes ago about don't worry about tropes. Don't worry about the so-called must-haves in whatever genre in which you're creating. Don't worry about it. Write your truth. Have it mean something to you. Make things for people who like the kinds of things you make. If you want to say something about free will, self-determinism, and, you know, your opinions of human freedom, then a great way to do that is to have your lead character be someone whose very living depends on denying others those things. Talking about Blade Runner, obviously, for the people in the back. Don't worry about people who aren't going to like your work. Worry about finding the people who will. Build that reader community around the people for whom the things that mean something to you also mean something to them. There's more of them out there than you think. And yeah, by all means, don't worry about the people who want to, dare I say the word, who want to cancel you or your work because you represent in fiction a made-up person or a made-up situation that is reprehensible. Anybody who connects the author of a work to the behavior of their characters is just stupid. Fuck those people. Don't worry about it. Write your truth. Have it mean something to you. Don't be afraid. There's an audience for that. There's a community for that. And when you find those people, they will stay with you for years and you'll get to know them. And when they go away, like we all lost Dave Alcock this past week, you'll feel it. Just remember, it's a community, folks. Creators and the people who enjoy their creations. We're peers. We're colleagues. We depend on each other. We enrich each other. All right. I think that's my rant. I hope it means something to you. If you enjoyed this episode of Sonatotum, I hope that you'll offer your feedback. You can leave a comment right there in the show notes for episode 51. Just go to mattselznick.com, find the podcasts, top menu item, go to episode 51, scroll to the bottom, leave your comment. You know how this works, right? I would love to hear from you. If it's easier for you, you can send me an email at matt@mattselznick.com. If you'd like, you can record a little voice message on your phone and email that to matt@mattselznick.com. Either way, feedback that I receive in my email, if it's a voice message, I will play that in the show and respond to you there. If it's a written email, I'll just paraphrase what you've written and respond in the show, but I'll also write you back, of course. I respond to every email I get. I respond to every comment I get on the website. Another way that you can support the show and help build this community is to rate and review Sonatotum with Matthew Wayne Selznick wherever you get your podcasts. A rating, 4, 5 stars, whatever you think is appropriate, takes just a few seconds. A review, written in your own words about what you think of the show or a specific episode, is even more valuable. And ratings and reviews, the reason they're important, it's not just about stroking my ego. The more ratings and reviews a show has, the higher it appears in the listings for that podcast provider, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google Play, Stitcher, whatever. Ratings and reviews make a show more visible, which brings more listeners, which strengthens this little community we've got. If you are moved to support the show and my creative endeavors in a tangible financial way on a month-to-month basis, it would be so wonderful if you could become a patron of Sonatotum and my creative endeavors as a whole. You can go to mattselznick.com/b-a-patron, and you can pledge anywhere from $3 to $20 a month. If you pledge at least $5 a month, you will receive Every episode of Sonatotum uncut and unedited, complete, which usually includes 15, 20, sometimes a half hour, more content than the version that makes it out to the public. There are many, many other perks of patronage, especially at the $5 and up level, including everything I make in a digital form, ebooks, audiobooks, music, printable materials, and of course this podcast. Everything I make for the duration of your patronage, you get automatically. And there are other benefits and perks and access available. Go to mattselznick.com/b-a-patron for all the details of all the different rewards and perks and bonuses you can receive when you become a patron. Like Ted Leonhardt and J.C. Hutchins, who have been patrons for some time now, at the $5 a month level and at the $20 a month level, respectively. Thank you, you too. There are other patrons who have offered their support simply for the love at the $3 level. So join them. Join this community. A reminder that when we reach $100 a month in patron revenue, 10% of the net proceeds goes to 826 National, a nonprofit here in the United States, dedicated to mentoring and supporting and developing new creative writers in underserved and urban communities throughout the United States. 10% of my net patron revenue will go to 826 National every single month as soon as I get at least $100 per month from patrons. So again, it's not just about supporting this community or this podcast or my own creative works. When you become a patron, as soon as collectively you all reach that $100 a month level, you're going to be helping create the next generation of writers. mattselznick.com/b-a-patron. Finally, as a reward, as my thank you to you for listening all the way through to each episode of Sonatotum, I like to mention the fact that I have special discounts on my services for authors and podcasters and other creators that I only offer to listeners of the show. These offers don't get mentioned, these discounts don't get mentioned anywhere else. The only way you know about this is because you're a listener of Sonatotum. To find out what the current discounts and deals are on my services for you, dear listener, visit mattselznick.com/listener-love. And if you are a current or aspiring author or creative person of any kind, I think you'll find some things there that can help you. All right, this was an interesting week. But I'm back up, back in the running. I have a new, more powerful computer. My primary tool is much improved after some struggle and a not insignificant financial investment. Yikes. I'm glad to be speaking to you again from the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media. The last two episodes have been in a park and in my car, respectively, because it's been just too damn hot here in the office. So we keep moving, right? We keep making things for people who like the kinds of things we make. I'm glad you're here. My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. Do take care.